Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening into this podcast episode. We have a repeat offender and a serial entrepreneur with us today, Amanda Abel. And I'm not quite sure how to introduce her because she now has two centres, probably even more. And we were just having a little giggle about the naming of them. And I'm just going to leave it to Amanda to introduce herself. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, Kathy. Leaving the tricky job to me.
Yeah, just opting out completely.
I own or have founded two practices. So I started off with the Northern Centre for Child Development, which is in Preston. Had that for, I think it's been 6 years. And then this year I decided that I didn't have enough grey hairs or wrinkles. And
well, thought, you had spare time perhaps.
Yeah, why not just open up another one, which I've called Hawthorne Centre for Child Development. So that's sort of over in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. And that's a much smaller little practice.
Mm. So if you're out for drinks and meeting people, how do you introduce yourself?
As the crazy lady.
Previously known as?
Yes. I guess it depends on what kind of setting I'm in, because I kind of do wear a few different hats. You know, I do my... I've got my practices, and so I guess in that context I'm the founder, of the Centres for Child Development, I guess. I do a little bit of consultancy work on the side, and there I'm just kind of like your paediatric psychologist, so I guess it kind of depends which hat I'm wearing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good, good, good. Now, we haven't had you on the podcast for a year, 2 years, so we know that business is going really, really well. What can you kind of, how can you summarise perhaps the last 2 years for us?
The last couple of years, I think, have been a bit more stable. So the first few years of setting up the business, it was such an unknown, and I was really lucky that I had stumbled across you, Kathy, because I think, that was just such a helpful part of setting up a business, in particular the staffing side of things, and thinking about the services that we provide. But so there was a lot of fumbling around for the first few years, and then the past probably 2 years, I feel like I've been able to consolidate a lot of the learnings. There have been some very hard lessons learned along the way, and I don't feel overwhelmed by it anymore. So those early days of business, you'll remember, I felt very overwhelmed, always stressed. It was quite an emotional journey. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like it's I've got a bit more of a hold on it.
What are those big lessons that you've...
I think one in particular is about trusting my gut, I think in particular with recruitment and big decisions that I'm needing to make. Another one is about taking my time. There's always this sort of sense of pressure from other people to make decisions really quickly. And I've really learnt that you can actually just say, hey, I'm going to get back to you about this. This is a big decision for me and I'm not prepared to make that right now on the phone while I'm at the park pushing my child on the swing or whatever it might be. So some of those ones have been the really big ones. Others have been more about learning how to streamline the business and be able to take a step back so that the place can run really effectively without me having to micromanage.
Wow, well done.
Yes, so that was a big one. So I feel like they're probably the biggest things that I've had to kind of, learn.
Yeah. And how is your team nowadays, your gorgeous team? You always had amazing people. I'm sure you still do.
I do. I'm so lucky. And look, this is another thing that I've learned is that generally recruit people based on their personality.
Yeah.
I don't really, you know, you're a psychologist. You know, you've got experience or you haven't, and I'll work with either option. But if you're not a nice person that is going to fit in with my team, then it's not going to work. So, you know, that I've just got this team that's just so beautiful and they put in so much effort. They love their jobs. They're so passionate. I've got a great mix of new grads and more experienced on the team. And just watching how they support each other is amazing. And we just have heaps of fun. So I'm just really lucky.
If Instagram's anything to go by, I feel as though I'm in the kitchen some of the time.
Yes. They're a great team.
And is it just psychologists or have you got some other awesomes in there?
So, look, it changes from time to time. At the moment, it's very psychologist heavy, and then we have a paediatrician and a speech pathologist, and a pretty big admin team now. So I've got four, you know, reception admin staff that sort of all work part time. So that's the little snapshot of our team at the moment.
Mm. And take us back to that moment. What were you thinking just before you decided to do the second centre?
It's been in the back of my head for ages. Mm. So I'd been really researching it quite a lot last year, and sort of putting the feelers out a little bit. And, look, I don't even know what the motivation is behind it. I just wanted to do it all again for some reason. I really, really enjoy the business side of running a business. I love it and I love setting up a practice, and it's challenges, but it's problem solving and I love that. So I think for me, a lot of the motivation was probably quite selfish in that way, just like it's something I like doing. Why don't I give it a shot? But also I think there is a need. Like there's, you know, we over in Preston will be getting referrals from all over Melbourne. And it really indicates to me that, you know, yeah, there's a lot of us that do this work, but maybe there's still not enough because there's just, you know, I can't get my clients into OTs in the eastern suburbs, like really, definitely not this term. There's wait lists for so many services. So I think it was, you know, partly selfish, partly about there needing to be a need for it.
Yeah. And what was different second time round?
Oh, my God, it was so much easier. I just knew what to do. Like, you know, just I knew what to expect. I knew it was going to cost me a lot. And so there were no real unexpected expenses coming up. But I just knew, you know, like we outsource a lot of things. So I just add the second location to all of that, get those people in to do X, Y, or Z. It was just easy. You know, I think I got the place in April and we were, you know, ready to go in sort of 4 weeks or so, because it was just done. You know, we already had the psychologists ready to work there. We had bookings and that kind of thing. So it was just so much easier. I mean, but having said that, you know, you take a big hit. You know, this is going to be a big hit financially, probably not going to make a massive profit, not that you ever really do, but it was easy in the practical sense.
Any surprises at all?
In terms of the location, so, you know, for people that aren't familiar with Melbourne, you know, the first practice is over in Preston, in Melbourne's northern suburbs. It's certainly an area that's picked up a lot over the past sort of 10 years or so. It's still a bit rough around the edges. We've had a really good run over there. We've been robbed once when we first started. It was nothing traumatic or anything bad. But, you know, my sense was I'll open up in the eastern suburbs and it's going to be really easy and safe. You know, I've been graffitied there already. I've had my letterbox knocked off. We're having to keep the doors locked and that kind of thing. So that's actually been a really big surprise that is based on my assumptions, you know, that I was just expecting this one kind of vibe for that area and it's actually really, really different. From a practical sense, Not really huge surprises. I guess I have been surprised that I haven't put a huge amount of effort into marketing the place because it's been a really big year and we've still managed to get referrals. So that's been good.
Yay. Good luck marketing.
Yay.
You've done so much work on your marketing. I would say there's way more strategy sitting there. Maybe that strategic approach is just your new normal nowadays.
Maybe. Winging it. Yes.
Strategically winging it.
Yes. It is. And look, I think time is such a big problem for me. I just don't have enough of it. And, you know, there's always something that comes up. There's always someone that wants to call me or someone that's emailing me and needing something, you know, and I'm a mum. So it's, you know, I think I had in my mind that, you know, I'm going to set aside this day per week and I'll be doing my marketing, and that just never happened. So it's very piecemeal at the moment. Yeah.
So what does your typical week look like?
So it's it varies, but generally I will go into either practice or both practices at least, you know, 1 or 2 days of the week each. I do always try to have 1 or 2 days where I don't go in. So I'm still generally working at home, you know, but I'm not physically there. Partly that was because we ran out of room, so there was no desk for me to sit at. So I kind of, if I wanted to get any work done, needed to be at home. But it's also just because I work best not being distracted. So I love just being at home in my active wear and my slippers and locked up with my computer and just getting my work done. I drop my daughter off at school, pick her up every day. You know, we do our after school activities and that kind of thing. Lead a pretty low-key life, you know. It's nice. Lots of downtime and that kind of thing. So, you know, the work days I do have a small caseload, so I still see, you know, a few clients either in Preston and Hawthorne and, you know, school visits here and there and liaising with whoever, paediatricians or, you know, schools and that kind of thing. So it's kind of, you know, it's quite haphazard, I think you would describe my week.
Creative and flexible.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it.
Creative and flexible, responsive. Wow. And are you working weekends and evenings?
Definitely I do bits and pieces. So I might be responding to the odd email in the evening. Mm. Probably not that much anymore.
Well done.
Yeah. Oh, I know, partly I'm just lazy. Like, I don't want to get up and get my phone or my computer. Weekends, look, I'll do the odd pop into, you know, Saturday's our busiest day at Preston. So I will sometimes pop in there and overlap with a team member or something like that. They're always calling me on a Saturday, the admin staff, because they'll have some questions here or there. But I do try to really not do that much my own time, yeah.
Would you describe that you're working full-time?
Yes, I would. Other people wouldn't see it, I think. You know, I look like, I remember my daughter's teacher, she was in prep last year, and I remember the teacher being really surprised when she saw my email signature, and she was sort of saying, gosh, I didn't even realise that you worked. You're always here at drop-off and pick-up and your parent helper. And I'm like, yeah, I do actually work. So it's just at different hours.
Yeah, moving those slidey pieces of the puzzle around.
Yeah.
So you've got team across 2 sites. How do you lead across 2 sites and keep everyone together and happy and forward future focused?
Yeah, that's probably something that I'm learning how to do.
Now would be the time.
Perfect time. I'm pretty lucky because there's only one psychologist at the moment that's only based at Hawthorne. And she's just super flexible, which is great. But I'm really mindful of making sure that everything kind of doesn't, you know, even from a geographical perspective, I don't want everything based at, say, Preston or, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, in terms of meetings, yes, we're ironing out the best approaches for that, but we use a lot of Skype and Zoom and that kind of thing to keep everyone linked in. And we do quite a bit of social stuff as well. So that's just about picking somewhere that's central and easy for everyone. We've got a mix of, you know, younger people and mums. So we need to, you know, you're never going to keep everyone happy in terms of what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I do have this great team that's just really flexible. But look, I do find for sure it's really important for me to be physically present at both sites, you know, here and there. I think especially with, you know, maybe your less experienced psychs, they don't need me there, but I think sometimes they might think they do. And it's just knowing that there is someone there that you can ask questions to and that kind of thing. Yeah.
But you're the draw card in the business, you know, with your clinical wisdom and experience and views and scope across things. They want a piece of you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's, you know, I think that's the beauty of having a really great mix of people on your team. Mm. That, you know, there's me and my experience, and then there's, you know, other experienced psychologists that have different experience to me, and we're able to offer that to, you know, the newer psychs so that they can really learn. Yeah.
And what are your sort of secrets for retention and keeping people happy and progressing and sticking around? And
yeah, it's hard because I feel like it's a real balancing act between being extremely generous, but then also not being, I don't want to say taken advantage of, because no one would intentionally do that on my team. But, you know, I think not giving too much of myself and you know, whatever else it might be. But definitely I like to offer a workplace that's flexible. I completely understand whatever stage of life you're in, flexibility is really important. And honestly, for me, if you're getting your hours in and your clients are happy, if you need to leave early, that's fine. So I think offering that and certainly having insight into what it's like to be an employee, because a lot of business owners, I think, forget what it's like. And I've been really lucky that I've had heaps of jobs along the way that I know what I do and don't like in a workplace myself, and I know what feelings are associated with different kind of situations. And so I really try to make sure that everyone's feeling valued and respected, and that their stuff is important as well. Yeah.
Do you do a lot of training, for want of a better word, in-house, and really leverage your talent in-house?
Yeah, we're just really lucky to have such a diverse team. So we do sort of like a monthly, you know, catch up with everyone in person. And we're really able to have a chat about, you know, obviously cases and things like that, do our case conference, and then we've got the opportunity for, you know, to draw on everyone's experience, you know, and if someone's got something to present about, you know, how to do a risk assessment or things to look for ASD in childcare centres and things like that, then we're able to do that. We do have a huge amount of knowledge amongst the team, and it's not always coming from us experienced ones down to the less experienced. Those girls are
differently
just
experienced.
Yeah. You know, they've got a different knowledge. So, yeah, we're definitely able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and it gets forgotten so much of the time. You engaged them and recruited them because they were amazing for personality and temperament and technical skills as well, but then somehow that isn't sort of polished and shared.
It's
just such good value on so many levels to really have a solid and pretty sparkly in-house learning program.
It is, and I think, you know, it's a really good opportunity for your less experienced staff to get confident with presenting or sharing their knowledge, learning how to speak up. You know, it's, I think probably one of my goals in my business was to create a workplace that's really amazing, and to allow people the space to grow. I know they're not all going to stay with me forever, and, you know, most of them are going to go and start up their own practice one day, and that's fine. But, you know, let's have people out there that are really good at what they do and that have been nurtured along the way. You know, and then they'll do the same for the next sort of generation.
Yeah. So how have your leadership skills changed in the last couple of years?
Oh, I reckon they've changed so much. I think I've gone from being terrified.
Nervous that they'll leave.
Yes. I feel like I've got really good boundaries now. I can say no. I think I used to just want to keep everyone happy. And now I just feel like I've got the insight and the experience to be able to sort of say, you know, actually that's not going to work, or this is a problem, you know, maybe occasionally having to pick people up on something that they may have done wrong or not to my liking. You know, I feel like I'm really confident with being able to do that now, whereas as a person that's always been something that's been hard for me. So that's been a really big area of growth, yeah.
Mm. That's cool. And that's going to make recruiting and business development, you know, easier going on as well if you've got that sort of core confidence sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you never think of the things that are going to be hard. I remember the last time I recruited, I had heaps of people responding. I interviewed quite a few people. And then I was like, oh, my gosh, now I've got to ring people and tell them they didn't get the job. Like, who thinks of this? Like, oh my God. So now, you know, the more people you interview, the more people you've got to ring and let down. And that's always an interesting process. And, you know, but I think like most things in life, I researched, you know, what's the best way to do this, got myself organized, had a plan and did it. And it wasn't that bad. But like so many other things, the thought of it was just terrifying.
Worse than the action.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm so excited to hear that you got loads of applicants. They're not words I hear very often because the recruitment landscapes are quite different or changing. Yeah.
Well, I think it's changed over the course of this year because I recruited at the start of this year and a lot of applicants. It could be a time of year thing. It's now October. I've just recruited again and really – there weren't a huge amount of applicants. Yeah.
Oh, well done. That's well done.
Yeah.
So checking in on the business side of things, are you kind of getting comfy as well with the numbers and the finances and all of that data? Is that kind of part of your day-to-day nowadays?
Yeah, definitely being more aware of it. Yeah. I think I went through a spell where I just didn't want to know anything about it and then realised that's really unhelpful.
That often doesn't end well.
No, it's never going to end well. There's still a lot I don't understand, but I think one of the best things I did a couple of years ago was I engaged an incredible bookkeeper.
Gold.
Yeah, she's been life-changing. I mean, she's an absolute ball breaker. She keeps me in line and it's just been incredible.
That's why she's a bookkeeper and not a psychologist.
Exactly. So, you know, we catch up as needed. She explains everything to me. I still have my accountant who's great and they liaise as needed, but the bookkeeper just does everything, you know, the pays and the, you know, all the bank transfers and paying the bills and all that. So I have the final say in it all and have to authorise it, but, you know, she's doing all that really time-consuming work of setting all these things up. So I am more comfortable with the numbers. I'm way less stressed about it. I used to be very stressed about the bank balance and I think you just end up a bit immune to that. And, you know, you get systems and you understand how things work and it gets less scary the more you know.
And having a safe pair of financial hands in a bookkeeper who can teach you concepts and teach you language and talk you around zero and someone who's got your back and got the files up to date within 3 or 4 days or a working week, oh, my God, that is sleep at night factor, I reckon.
It is. It's amazing. And I think as well, you know, it keeps me accountable because I think, you know, sometimes you could just let all your zero reconciling go and then you just got to sit there for, you know, 5 hours and match stuff up, whereas she's on top of it. She's like, I don't know what all of these things are. Can you please match them up? So, you know, it's great having someone else. It's just another person in your team, really.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And whilst they can all work remotely, it's really nice when they come in from time to time as well, when you catch up face to face, because, yeah, it just adds to that connection, but you can just sort of understand it differently and see it differently. And mighty fine recruit, mighty fine person. Ah, and what practice management software are you using and how does that fit in?
Yeah, so we use Power Diary, which has, you know, evolved over the years.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a million times better than it used to be. I quite like it. It seems to do everything we need to do. I'm about to get it integrated to my new website so we can look at sort of the online bookings and that kind of thing. Yeah. But, yeah, look, Power Diary is doing a pretty good job.
Good. Yeah, you are building a new diary, a new website. That makes sense with who you were just talking to.
Yes.
What's prompted that?
Oh, this has been on the cards for a while. So, I mean, I like my current website.
It's great.
My husband did it for me and that's not his job, but he managed to build a website, which was amazing. And it certainly served its purpose up until now, but we need something that just does a bit more. Yeah. So, and I also really want to set things up so that, you know, my husband and I, we both own the business. And I'd really like us to not be as, or it to be as dependent on us, you know. So if we're away and something needs changing to the website, you know, it'd be ideal for us not to be getting an email to have to do that and that kind of thing. So I really wanted it set up by like a third party. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should probably shout out to John Hollenberg at this point because he's been on the podcast. You know him. I know him. They're just starting the build on my new website. So, John, if you're listening, we're fans.
He's going to be forced to listen now. Yeah, I know. And how funny to find out that you knew him. We went to school together. We lived really close together. And
totally bizarre.
So funny that you ended up knowing him as well. So, but look, his work is incredible. The process of going through this website, you know, we're just at the start of it, but it's just so clear. A lot of people complain about web developers and web designers and that kind of thing. And, you know, this process so far has just been really good. So nice and clear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great support, great videos, great training, great documents, great frameworks.
Yep.
I would just wish he could send me some time. I'll see what I'll see if I can put in that request. But they maintain and update and keep it, you know, cyber safe and all of this good stuff. And when stuff has gone wrong, they've fixed it within hours, even on weekends and things. So
I think you can see the passion and, you know, even for, you know, in allied health and that kind of thing. I think if someone's got passion for their job and their business, it just comes through in the work that they do and how they present, you know, their business. So
Yeah. You're also showing up on social media all over the place. What's the idea? What's the strategy sitting there?
It's about being opportunistic. So there's not necessarily any kind of seeking out or strategy involved in it from my part. But, you know, and maybe this isn't, you know, going back to one of the first questions you asked me, maybe this comes back to what are the things I've learned. And learning about which opportunities to take up and which ones not to. You know, I get approached quite a lot because I guess being a psychologist, sometimes people want a psychologist to back up whatever it is that they're doing. And, you know, a lot of the time I'll say yes if it's something that I'm passionate about or agree with. Yeah. But certainly there's been a lot of opportunities that have been you know, I mean, I don't know how worthwhile it is, but I like to practice my skills, you know, and whether it might be an interview on the news and that kind of thing, the more opportunities I get at doing it, the better I'll get at it. So I'm just happy to keep doing these kinds of things.
Yeah. I remember you also saying something that stuck with me about wanting to demystify and normalize psychology and psychologists and who you are and what you do and the outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was so I started up an Instagram page and that was my really big kind of goal with that because, you know, a lot of the time in the allied health world, the pediatric world, the psychologists are always the scary ones. So, you know, there's just this associated scariness with us, I think. And I really wanted people to understand that, you know, psychologists working in the pediatric world are not scary. And there's so much overlap between all of our disciplines and we all work really closely together. And there can be a really important place to have a psychologist involved on your team. So really just kind of wanted parents to know that we're not scary and we can help with a range of different issues.
Yeah. And are you pleased with the outcomes of that?
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, I haven't really measured that, so I don't know. Hey,
moving on. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, I don't know how effective it is. But, you know, I mean, I guess you could judge by the type of engagement that you have.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also just in terms of referrals and that kind of thing and how busy your practice is. You know, and we do as a team and me myself a lot of sort of, you know, speaking events and things like that. And I think that that, how we present ourselves in that setting certainly does that will sort of reaffirm the kind of image we want to present.
Yeah, the approachability. And
Yeah. So it's kind of an across-the-board thing, but Instagram was that initial platform.
Yeah. Very, very good to hear. Very good to hear. What are you thinking the business will look like in the next couple of years?
I'm hoping it's that kind of solidity and stability will, you know, continue. We just did major works on a weekend at Preston where we moved around a whole heap of rooms and we've moved reception to where the waiting room used to be and opened it up because I now need 2 reception staff, something that I didn't really realise for a while that having that many consulting rooms with 1 reception staff was just really silly. So, you know, we had to move things around a bit to accommodate that. And, you know, in that process, I really realised that it's becoming a much more sort of professional kind of looking practice, you know. And I think that's my goal, to really get it where it's just running nicely by itself in terms of all the day-to-day stuff and that my involvement and you know, the other sort of key people in the business, you know, get drawn on as needed.
That sounds great. Your rooms were always beautiful and they photographed so well. They're always gorgeous.
I love
and
that.
What difference do you think that has made to your team and your customers?
Oh, look, I think the team likes working somewhere nice. I like working nice. It probably needs a bit of a facelift at the moment in some of the rooms. But, you know, and I think we'll often get clients commenting on, you know, how lovely they think it is or oh, this room's so nice and, you know, asking where you got pieces of furniture.
Yeah, why is that rabbit pink?
Often the answer is Kmart.
I was going to mention Kmart because I thought you might have diversified, but Kmart and IKEA have got a lot to answer for, but you can still get it really, really wrong. So,
well, you can, and that's, you know, it's certainly about balance. When we set up Hawthorne, my husband was like, okay, you've reached your IKEA Kmart quota.
Yes.
You need to be going somewhere else now.
Yeah, no Allen keys in the opening of this second venue.
Exactly, exactly. But, yeah, I think the decor, you know, I do, you have to put thought into it. And you need to think about who's coming into your rooms, and your decor really needs to suit that if you want people to feel comfortable. So,
yeah. Oh, is there a third centre in your dreams?
There could be. I think so.
Nightmares? No, in your dreams.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It depends. Depends how many more wrinkles I want. But you know, I think I could do a third one. You know, or even, I don't know, something to sort of really service the regional and rural areas of Australia because they're really, really underserviced, you know, and I mean that opens up another big can of worms in terms of how you do that, but that's something I'd really love to do.
Oh, super amazing. So good to hear all of this good stuff. Have you got any questions for me?
Oh, gosh, where do I start?
I I didn't tell you that you could ask this. So if there's nothing, that's fine. We can, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess in terms of, you know, I found your, you know, as you know, your input, especially when I sort of first discovered you, which was really when I first started.
It was years ago.
Yeah, I just got that practice at Hawthorne, I think, like a month before, and then I met you at some Christmas networking drinks.
I'll be there.
Yeah. And, you know, and so I think, you know, one of the things that I know that you do is you support the business owners, you know, in such a niche area as well, and it's so needed. But I wonder what changes you've noticed, you know, maybe over the past few in terms of the struggles that the business owners are experiencing.
Yeah, it has changed. Where do I start? I think for those that are working in and around and on and under the NDIS, that has been pretty roller coastery, if that can be a new verb or whatever that is.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
And I think that the piece last May with the audit really set a whopping big bowling ball through, and businesses are falling and others are still standing. And those that are coming through the audit process now are still alive. And so that triggered a whole lot of questioning. I think it really challenged mindset, business beliefs. I think there was a little bit of shame coming out of that as well, that, oh my gosh, now they'll see what we're not and what I'm not and what I haven't done and what I should have done.
Yes.
And that's a horrible position. That's just, tough, super tough.
Well, and I think as a business owner, and I mean, look, even as a practitioner in the kind of health industry, that you often get struck by the whole imposter syndrome, or sometimes you have those moments where you just feel like a fraud, or you feel like you just, you know, what am I doing? And I think from when you then have to tackle that from a business perspective as well, you know, if you're getting challenged or questioned about how you do things and why, I think that it can really be a challenge for self-esteem. And
absolutely, and you get guilt, and you get kind of just head up about, shoulda, woulda, coulda, not gonna.
And you know,
all those valid business emotions.
Totally. And we're not NDIS registered. I chose not to be.
Yeah.
And I think I'm glad that someone must have given me the heads up about that. But, you know, I see in a lot of, you know, the business Facebook groups and things like that, that the stress that everyone goes through in terms of those audits and the cost, and, you know, it's a really challenging time for small businesses, isn't it? Because I think there's some really big players that, you know, probably have a bit more means, but the focus maybe isn't as passionate as maybe some of the small business owners.
Different players in the market for sure. I still see financial integrity and financial fluency as a challenge, and that doesn't matter whether you're a solopreneur or if you've got a team of 30 or you're a team leader in a not-for-profit or whatever, but having your eye on the numbers and having the know-how and being able to get the numbers you need and use them, that there can be some really willful ignorance there. And I got my hand up on that for the first few years for sure. But when you're wanting to play seriously, when you bring in team, you have financial responsibility, and it's you just got to get in there.
And you know what? I mean, that just highlights one of the other things that I've really learned is don't be scared to spend money. You have to spend money to make money. And I know my accountant always said to me, if I was like, oh, I need to buy this or that, he's like, well, are you going to make money out of it? And I'm like, well, yes. It's like, well, then you need to do it. And I think a lot of the time, you know, there's a lot when you're first starting out, there can be that real terror about having to fork out more money for something. And, you know, if they're, you know, to people that are just starting out, I would be saying things like get a credit card, get an overdraft, whatever it is. You need to spend the money and do it properly from the start. Because
get a bookkeeper, get admin, get
outsource,
some business coaching.
Yeah.
Going to be forever.
Because I think, you do need to spend the money and you know, invest in your business.
Yeah. And then I guess the last quick challenge is those businesses that are 5 or 6 years old that were sort of that sprung to life in the early NDIS days, that they've found their place and they've found their stride, and the business owners starting to become team facing, starting to release the clinical work, getting systems, really getting the software spinning. They're ready to grow, but there's the recruitment piece. Yeah. And so recruitment in the last 6 months is different from the 6 months before that, which is different from last year. So there's these businesses that are so positioned to fly, and it's then a leadership piece, a recruitment piece, a retention piece. So that's a thing I'm seeing in businesses that have got a, you know, growing pains, as what I described it last night to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with that, you know, you do really have to think about how you're positioning yourself as an employer.
Absolutely,
if you want people to be approaching you, you know, so that you can keep their details for when you are recruiting. But I think also, you know, maybe we have to get creative with how we're you know, fostering the growth. You know, certainly in the psych, you know, I get probably maybe 3 or 4 emails a week from masters and you know, doctoral students wanting to do their placements, which is just something I've always put my head in the sand about. I have had one once before, in fact, and that was amazing. And now she works, you know, works.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. But it's a hard, it's a really hard process. And, you know, it would be amazing if that became a bit easier or there was some really good processes around that, because, you know, these guys have so much to offer, these placement students, and they could be a really amazing, affordable way for people to provide services too. So I think we're going to have to get creative, you know.
Absolutely.
How we utilise our resources.
Yeah. And what worked last year, probably on any level, on any front of business, just may not work this year.
Yeah.
Really good chance it's going to be obsolete next year. So same old isn't going to cut it.
No, we really need to practice our cognitive flexibility skills.
Indeed. Yeah. All that executive function stuff. Absolutely amazing. Well, what a good catch up. I'm so glad you've jumped back into my diary. Just wonderful to hear what you're up to. You can have the last say. What are your words of wisdom?
Oh my gosh. How, you know me, I'm not a very succinct person.
We can have several words of wisdom. You can have a whole paragraph of wisdom.
Look, my words of wisdom are really about finding your balance, on definitely just being you and letting, you know, your own style and personality and your own passion for what you do shine through. And not everyone's going to love that. And that's okay. Not everyone needs to, you know, and I think if you're doing that, then you're really, you're presenting you out to the world, and that's, you know, what more could people want, than a genuine, authentic person, that's running a business and providing services, you know, and I'll always say outsourcing, just outsource whatever you need to get stuff done.
And not just at business, at home as well.
Everything, yeah, for sure.
Creates the whole economy, makes it all go round.
Yeah, totally.
Totally. Amazing, absolutely love it. Well, make sure you come back, particularly if there is a third business baby there, but come back anyway across next year. That'll be great to hear where the adventure's going.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Kathy.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.